Laquito de lunes a jueves. You will find it.
The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
You're on, Larry. Larry.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in cheers and applause? I think not. You know, I'm getting a vibe out there, a vibe. From the comments, the emails, the fantastic fan art, the music, and I guess the worldview that we are kindred spirits. It almost feels tribal, cosmically linked, karmically linked, kismet. And that's a very cool thing. Because most of us spend vast portions of our lives being shoehorned, even held captive in places and situations with people we'd rather bludgeon than speak to, don't we? Think about it. Years and years of school, the mandatory 12, maybe 16 or more, held prisoner and controlled by teachers who now demand that we call them educators because, well, four syllables is always better than two, isn't it? A very few of whom were cool. Many were neutral, and some raging assholes on a power trip. And what's all that school for, hmm? To get us ready for work. Another captive, often hostile environment where our very survival depends on our compliance. Ah, there's a word that should trigger homicidal feelings. Compliance. Every corporation now has a vast department or departments dedicated to compliance, to policies and procedures and codes of ethics and regulations and on and on and on and on. And some people, some twisted, sick, fucked up people, actually love compliance. They love to be given orders and told what to do. No, 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 not the kinky leather people. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the walking around daytime ones at the office. Those ones with the hive mentality, right? They like to live their lives in a swarm, surrounded by other mindless drones, united in blissful obedience to the collective. Yeah. Did you see the movie World War Z? That's what I'm talking about. Millions and millions of zombies who think and move as one organism. You know who they are. They're the ones sitting cross-legged around the campfire, singing Kumbaya or Carol King's entire catalog. But that's not you, is it? Because there's likely a traceable trail to the place and time where we both are at this very moment. Many of you found this show through Dick Masterson, and Dick and I have been friends for years. How did Dick and I ever meet? Well, funny you should ask. Years ago, I tripped over Dick's Bust-A-Gut-Funny website. Then I bought his book, and lo and behold, it was from the same outfit that published one of my books, Mac Daddy. And then my editor called from New York, and surprise, surprise, that same guy edited both our books. Imagine my shock and delight to learn that Dick and I were practically neighbors, right here in Los Angeles, the city of few angels, but millions of fucked up wannabe movie stars and actual movie and TV stars who are even more fucked up. Now, in last week's episode, we covered a smorgasbord of topics, and to my surprise and delight, it damn near doubled the downloads of any of the previous episodes. We talked about the workplace. For many of us, unfortunately, the shittiest place we go all day. And it's not getting any better. Google is being sued by the state of California for running a program of internal informants, snitches, whereby staffers are encouraged to inform on other staffers suspected of talking to the press. Time Incorporated, those warm and fuzzy folks who bring you Home Box Office and the swimsuit issue, is looking for a few good rats. Their offices are now plastered with posters encouraging employees to tattle on others who misbehave. And the quote is, "Our integrity starts with you. One quick anonymous phone call keeps Time Inc. the workplace you deserve." You think those posters are hanging in the corner offices? I bet they aren't. Work has become an Orwellian nightmare. And I feel your pain. I really do. Unfortunately, work is often not just what we do, it's who we are. It defines us, especially in America. You go to a party and meet some schmo, and before they even ask your name, which they invariably forget the moment you tell them, they ask you, "What do you do?" In New York, they may be genuinely curious. Sometimes they're actually interested in how you spend your day. Sometimes they just want to slot you into their social hierarchy. Are you a neurosurgeon or a garbage man? Excuse me, I mean sanitation engineer. I'll be riffing on job titles a little later. In Los Angeles, when someone asks what you do, there is only, and I mean only, one reason. And that reason is to determine if you are a studio exec or A-list director or producer, someone who can advance their career, even if their career isn't acting. I know a wealthy obstetrician who often bails on patients and mothers in labor so he can get to an audition for goddamn commercials. Now, in most of Europe, asking a person what they do is considered gauche. As gauche as asking them the consistency of their morning stool. It just isn't done. But back to work. It has become more unbearable than anyone could have imagined. Because the fucking compliance Nazis are in control, aren't they? And you've got to wonder, is there any hope? Maybe there is. In France, they just passed a law that employers cannot obligate workers to answer emails at home. They have the right now to disconnect. I applaud that. So hard my hands might bleed. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, if this idea catches on, not that we need any more government meddling and regulation, but maybe the idea will just catch on as a movement and we can all cut the electronic leashes. You know, I recall when cell phones came into vogue talking to some pinhead who was orgasmic over his new company-provided Motorola flip phone, clipped to his belt, hardcore nerd style. Some guys so loved their phones they had hand-tooled leather holsters for them, like Wired Earp's freaking Colt 45s. And way back then, I warned this guy that the company phone was really just an electronic leash. "But I'll be so much more productive," he gushed. Don't you love those types? The company men, yeah, and women. The ones who will dance through a minefield, swallow a hand grenade, or open a vein for the company. But they're usually full of shit, aren't they? They hang around the office just until the boss finishes final bed check. And the minute bossy is gone, they're gone. Sometimes they are true believers. When the CEO gives his stultifying go-get-em team speech at the Christmas party or an offsite, blowing clouds of rah-rah smoke and says, "We're all family here," those dolts actually believe it. If they think the company is family, they should try asking the boss for a kidney. Eventually, always, always, without fail, the rubes do have that epiphany. Business softens, or they have a bad quarter or two, and suddenly they find themselves sitting across the desk from some cyborg in human resources. I love that one, right? Human resources. You see any bears or buffaloes in those cubicles? What was wrong with personnel? Oh, obviously, well, it was only one word with three syllables. Human resources is two words with five syllables, so it must be more important, right? Some job titles and corporations go on for days and are absolutely inscrutable. Legacy implementation consultants. Huh? A receptionist is now the guest services agent. But there's only one title in corporate America that means jack shit. Owner. Because he or she is the only one that can't be fired. So if you ever find yourself sitting across the desk from that human resources cyborg, and you're hearing these words, help us to help you. If you ever hear those words, lie down. Lie down right away, because you're already dead. Thanks to Digitalia, many people, now their jobs are a 24/7 endeavor. If you own a business, okay, that's what business owners do. But if you work for someone else, which most people still do, whatever happened to an honest day's work for an honest day's pay? That's history. Now we're all on 24-hour call, and it's bullshit. But maybe, just maybe, salvation may be coming from France. Imagine that. Other than pointy chicks named Solange who wear pencil skirts that could fit an eggplant, how much is there to like about France? But they've got an idea, and it just might be the start of a long overdue movement. When the whistle blew and Fred Flintstone slid down the Brontosaurus back, work was over. Yabba dabba doo was Cro-Magnon speak for, I'm off duty, don't bug me. I'm going bowling with Barney, or maybe I'll take Wilma out for a steak and some grab ass at the drive-in. But now, for damn near a quarter century, the quittin' time whistle has been silenced. My first throwdown over the 24/7 electronic leash came when I was working for a woman's magazine. It was surreal. I was one of three males on staff of a magazine written for and staffed by chicks, only a few of which were pointy. I won't reveal the actual name, but you'd probably know it. We'll just call it, Estrus Magazine. And it was hysterical. Me schmoozing clients that made lipstick and face cream and pantyhose and remedies for vaginal dryness because I could really speak with authority to those topics. It was one of those situations you have in life where your constant daily question is, how the fuck did I get here? But the money was good. I needed the gig, and at the time, the biggest seller was actually the woman who recruited me. I dug her, not in a hot-for-her sense, but in a business context. She was professional, highly competent. She was sharp, she was cool, she was easy to get along with, and she hired me because we had a rapport and a mutual respect, and she knew I could get the job done, which I did very well for way longer than I had ever anticipated. Because when the money's okay and we're not in constant pain, we just sort of drift, don't we? But one day, she left. Got another gig. And her replacement was a grimbo. A maladjusted, angry, classless, man and woman-hating nightmare who had not the slightest idea of what she was doing. All she knew how to do was yell and scream and break balls and vaginas. And most importantly, drink. But really, she didn't drink very well either, because she always got loaded and nasty. Let me give you a visual aid. Think Rosie O'Donnell. Any Rosie O'Donnell fans in here? Come on, show of hands. No, didn't think so. How about that? It was uncanny how much this woman looked and sounded like Rosie. And when she met me, it was hate at first sight. She was an abrasive, uncouth loudmouth with all the charm and sparkle of a steaming pile of fresh hyena shit. Well, the job quickly went from bad to really bad. I'd be working late in the office, high atop Wilshire Boulevard, and at 7 or 8 o'clock at night in Los Angeles. Now, Rosie she'd call from the home office in New York, which meant it was damn near bedtime for non-drunks. Before she'd even speak, I knew it was her, because there'd be this huge intake of breath, almost like a snore, signaling that she was deep, deep into the wine spritzers, or as she pronounced them, wine spritzers. Those are often the drink of choice for drunks in denial, aren't they? An honest sot chugs whiskey, a drink you drink to make you drunk. A cowardly drunk drinks sangria, or wine spritzers, or dozens of other cowardly concoctions that enable them to bullshit themselves. So there'd be this snore-like inhale. And then the litany would begin. She'd try to start off sort of pseudo-friendly, you know? Ha-ha, but with a strong undercurrent of malice.
I surf the dude.
I've never been on a surfboard in my life. But she thought everyone in L.A. surfed.
You feeling tubular tonight?
Rosie had a Bensonhurst accent you could cut with a chainsaw. Taking a page from the Jesus debate playbook, I'd sometimes remain silent. Oh, yeah. Read the Bible. It's astonishing how many times J.C. answered assholes with total silence.
Hello? Are you there?
My silence unnerved her.
Listen, separate dude. You better catch a big wave, because you're on thin ice.
Wait a minute. Are we surfing here or figure skating?
Don't get smart with me. I'll fire you right now. Tonight.
She was pissed. Then I'd hear the bottle on the rim of the spritzer glass. She'd take a long slug.
You think you know so much? We'll see about that. I'm warning you, don't fuck with me. Look what you made me do now. I spilled my spritzer. Christ's sake, look at this mess. All over my new afghan.
Which asshole hired her and why remains a mystery to this day. I'd get at least one of those calls a week, sometimes two. She was enormously amusing. What Rosie didn't know was that I knew a guy who knew a guy. No, not Tony Spumante, although Tony did offer me support in bearing up under Rosie's onslaughts. Hey, Larry, how's that fucking tugboat bitch boss of yours? You know, I know this crazy lady wrestler. She's really cool. She owes me some vig. How about I have her follow Rosie in a toilet and throw her a beating? That was the gentle warning people would get who crossed Tony and his friends. They never said, beat him up. They'd say, trauma beaten. I miss that lingo. I really do. And as usual, Tony displayed a certain degree of chivalry. Even though Rosie acted like a man, a really crude, obnoxious, and ignorant man, she was technically female. And Tony, he was not going to have a male leg breaker kick her ass for me. He'd subcontracted to a lady wrestler who owed him money. So anyway, Estrus Magazine was owned by a holding company, and I had a friend who knew a guy way, way at the tippy top of the holding company. So I was sort of protected from Rosie. But still, the moment she signed on, I decided to leave. The whole idea of me working there was silly from jump. Rosie took it from silly to unbearable. While working there, I had the most bizarro experiences. At one off-site meeting, they rented a big-ass sailboat. And the idea was that the staff would all sail for a day and crank the winches and hoist the jib and furl the mainsail and all that happy horseshit, and it would help build the team spirit. And so, in the hotel the night before, everyone was given a pair of boating sneakers that were manufactured by some client. I tried on my 12Ds, and they felt like the stitches had been sewn with razor wire. They hurt just standing in my room. Wearing those to climb the crow's nest was out of the question. And so next morning, I arrived at the good ship team builder wearing my own sneakers, not the ones we were expected to wear. Compliance. The way those women reacted, you would have thought my feet were trapped in bloody, fresh-skinned muskrat pelts.
He's wearing his own shoes! He's not wearing the shoes! Oh my god! Oh my god!
And so it began. Somebody blew a bosun's whistle, the lines were cast off, and the team-building adventure began. It was fantastic. Some swabby showed us how to tie half-hitch knots and what eight bells meant and how to furl the mainsail and luff the jib and crank the witch and batten down the binnacle. In 30 minutes, I felt like Jack fucking Sparrow. But after a while, all those chipper chicks weren't looking so chipper. They were no longer sprinting around the deck. They were walking, slowly, some were hobbling. Where was Rosie throughout this? Well, Rosie had wedged her ass into a seat at the bow and had some mendicant keeping her hydrated with wine spritzes. And all the underlings were terrified of Rosie, too terrified to be first to complain about the razor wire boat shoes. After a few hours, the ship was headed for the dock. All faces looked pained. Rosie's looked flushed and besotted. And one girl sits down and unlaces her shoes. Oh my God, look at my feet, look at my feet. Their feet were bloody. And everyone, except me and Rosie, took off their shoes to assess the damage. It was so severe, they called ahead to the dock to get someone down there with a first aid kit and a few golf carts to haul them back to the hotel, which was only a few hundred yards from the dock, but nobody could walk. It was a textbook exhibition of groupthink and team building and peer pressure and compliance and stupidity. I stood perfectly comfortable in my own sneakers as I watched them all limp, barefoot, down the gangplank. Last one off the boat was Rosie. She was quite tipsy. She paused to gaze at me from face to feet and back to face, and she said,
I guess you're smarter than you look, surfer dude.
Back at the office, Rosie's late-night calls continued and became even more annoying. One day I got a call from a woman at the New York office. I forget what lofty title she held, but what she did was the accounting for the magazine. And she let it slip that my territory sometimes outperformed that of Rosie's and her many, many minions. Ah, mystery solved. Rosie hated my guts because I made her look bad. Now back to those electronic leashes and the French. So I'm going on vacation, and I get a late call from Rosie in New York.
I hear you're taking a vacation, surfer dude.
That's right. 10 days.
Where can you be reached?
Vacation means vacation, meaning I can't be reached.
What are you talking about? If something goes wrong out there in La La Land, or you're at surf camp or whatever, I gotta be able to reach you. Where you going?
On an expedition in the rainforest of Costa Rica. It was bullshit. I was going on a cruise.
You better hope nothing falls through the cracks while you're gone.
Fast forward a month or two. I'd been sniffing around pretty hard for another deal and had one nearly bagged when I got a call from Rosie telling me she was coming to L.A. and wanted to meet with my top clients. Of course, it was February. It's always amazing how people in New York, home offices, only need to visit L.A. when it's winter in New York. The next week, she came out. And I'm in the final negotiations for my next gig, but it's not quite a done deal. Or I would have told Rosie to pack it up her capacious ass. I take her around to some meetings, and she's clearly hungover and a horror show, taking cell phone calls from her husband in the middle of meetings, calling people by the wrong name, just being an asshole. On the elevator to the next meeting, my phone tings, and there it is, an email with the formal job offer, salvation, in a completely different industry, so I didn't give a shit about burning bridges. I exit the elevator with Rosie and approach the receptionist. I'm sorry, I mean the guest services agent. And tell her, we're here to see Mr. So-and-so, and she says, oh, sorry, his department just moved 2 floors downstairs. And Rosie turns purple and says,
nice going, jackass. You don't even know what floor your customers are on.
Well, that tore it. I replied to Rosie. With such volume, I'm pretty sure she sustained some permanent hearing loss. Then I got in an elevator without Rosie. She stood there with her mouth hanging open. I could actually see her many fillings in her thick, geographic tongue. As the door began to close, she found her voice.
Where you think you're going? You can't leave me here. You call yourself a man?
As the doors clunked shut in her face, it was over. I was free. Years later in New York, I banged into a former co-worker from Estrus magazine who told me how thrilled she was to hear that I had driven Rosie out to a really dangerous neighborhood and booted her ass out of the car. It's funny how stories take on a life of their own, like in the old game of telephone, right? So if you're stuck in the quicksand of a gig you loathe, there is a way out. Plot and plan and stealth and silence, and you can and will extricate yourself from misery. And so what about the French? Are they on to something? Don't we hope so? Hasn't it all become too much? As much as we need to disconnect from work, it's really great to be connected to all of you. I want to thank those fabulous, extra special friends, the Patreonies, as Dick calls them, the bold and brave who keep the lights on here at the Take No Shit Dojo. Your support is what enables me to carry out my sacred mission, a Take No Shit America. A quick shout out to some new club members. Goose, David G, Ben S, Donald P, Michael S, JW, Jesse Samuel A, Ronnie F, Edward B, Stephen R, James G, Adam C, Elijah W, and Stephen L, who just took a step forward to the red belt level. Rewards will be more timely as we get this machine properly lubed and calibrated. We love your comments and feedback. One listener likened this show to sitting in leather chairs by the fireplace with cigars and top shelf whiskey. I like that image. Somebody else called me the gangsta Garrison Keillor. Thank you. There are some fantastically talented artists out there. If anyone wants to render either of those images, please do, and I'll share them with the world. So get at us at the webpage or Patreon or Twitter or Facebook. It's all the same address, That Larry Show. I want to give a shout out also, as promised, to my first five Twitter followers, Joel C., Brad, Rob C., Edward B., and Grim Guts, and to the many more who've since joined the dojo. You shall find eternal bliss. Shoot us an email at thatlarryshow@gmail.com, or even better, let us hear your voice. Just dial 302-71-LARRY. I'll leave you with some final thoughts. Maybe you're chest deep in some workplace misery. Well, this is the Take No Shit Dojo, and we just may be able to help. And if we can't, Tony Spumante sure can. So let us know who or what is tormenting you, and we'll try to get you a plan of action. If you prefer, we'll keep you anonymous. Thanks for stopping by, here at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment, where truth lives, and we take no shit. See you next time.